Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
What Did I Just Witness by Material Ad 253. I'll preface this by stating that I've had countless sleep paralysis and OBE experiences since I was very young. I'm now 28, and on average, still to this day, I have 1 to 2 out-of-body experiences per week. In comparison, I experience sleep paralysis maybe once a month. I can only describe my average sleep paralysis as being awake in a body that cannot see or move. The only way I could break out of this sleep paralysis was by envisioning myself jumping, in which I'd feel myself wading through this gel-like substance before finally being able to wake up. However, this sleep paralysis event took place just over a week ago, and it was like nothing I had ever experienced. I'm hoping that there are others who have had something similar happen to them. About a week and a half ago, I entered sleep paralysis and came to that moment of realization of being unable to move. Instead of attempting to break out, like I described above, I had the confidence to stay in the experience and begin to calm myself. I focused on remaining calm for a good solid minute until my body started to somewhat aggressively vibrate. This caused me great panic, and I now wanted to get out. So, I began using my usual technique to escape sleep paralysis. But this time, I didn't feel myself going through that familiar jail-like substance. After roughly 30 seconds, I found myself in this amazing white space. There was no shape or definition, just pure white everywhere I looked. I was unable to maintain this space for long. I felt something tethering me, pulling me back. It felt like one of those paddles with a string and a ball attached. I was yanked back and returned to my sleep paralysis. But this time, all that fear and panic left. I wanted to go back to that white, enveloping space. I used the same technique and managed to return. However, upon reaching this space again, I noticed I wasn't alone. And this is where things got even weirder. So I go back to this white space, except this time I'm coming out of a physical body that isn't mine. I can't stress this enough. I look down and see myself, this rope-like transparent shape leaving the body of a white blonde guy wearing a blue tight-skin uniform. I start panicking and freaking out when all of a sudden, he opens his eyes. And then it gets stranger. As soon as he opens his eyes, my heart starts racing. I'm looking directly at his focused blue eyes, but while I'm looking at him, I'm also simultaneously seeing myself as the tether from his perspective. This moment lasted maybe 1 minute. Then I felt myself pulled back one last time, and I woke up. I've had some strange OBEs and sleep paralysis episodes before, but nothing quite like this.
Lachine House by N. Marshall. This will be a long story, so buckle up. I was 13 when I first moved to Ireland. My mother wanted to return home and take care of my uncle, who was battling mental illness and, in all honesty, wasn't doing well. I, personally, was looking to get away from bullying and the isolation it brought from it. And before we knew it, we were saying goodbye to my elder sister and our cats, and taking the ferry from England to the valleys of West Cork. Now, before I continue the story, I must give you some context. My family are pagan, and I was raised in a very sensitive household. My mother read tarot as a hobby in a book cafe, and at various pagan camps and fairs. My father dabbled in every form of divination and shamanic journeying he could. We were a sensitive family and had various haunted houses and spooky occurrences throughout my lifetime. I can't remember a time when there weren't some sort of kitchen witchery, prophetic dreams, ghost removal services, and rituals in various friends' back gardens. All of this to say, when weird stuff goes on, it doesn't go unnoticed. For a long while, weird stuff would always happen around me and my sister, but adulthood curbed those events. Back to the actual story. We moved to Lachine, a small blip in an area in Skibbereen that, even with phone lines and Wi-Fi, felt old. I don't know if either of you have visited the Irish countryside, but in certain places the air feels ancient, full of something that doesn't like to be messed with. The same goes for The Rock, the house my uncle and his dog, Jake, lived in, which we bundled our life into while trying to figure out life in a new land. It didn't take long for things to get strange. I think it was within 2 nights the first occurrence happened. From the first sleepy hours unpacking our suitcases from our packed car, I felt like I was walking through a busy street, and I was a stranger there. Eyes on me, and not all of them friendly. When the activity started kicking up, my father and uncle had left one early morning to go back to England and grab the last of our furniture and things. We went about our day, innocuous and usual. I barely remember it. But once night fell, I felt that same feeling again. The dog took to following me everywhere. My room was at the very back of the house, across from my uncle's, in a long corridor that ended in a laundry room, and had a piano leaning against the wall between the bathroom and my uncle's room. My room wasn't set up yet, so I lumped myself into a painfully uncomfortable couch in my parents' room. The dog lay next to me on the floor, my mom in her bed, and the house was humming with quiet. I couldn't sleep. Every time I would close my eyes and finally start to drift off, I'd jolt awake, feel the need to look around the room, check on my sleeping mother, and glance at the door. At one point in the wee hours, I was jolted awake once again, and this time something was different. The air felt even heavier, and static ran up my arms. Jake also jolted awake, despite sleeping like the dead, old man snoring and all. I could hear the tail end of something, which is what I assume woke me. I strained to listen, and so did the dog, his ears pitched forward. It came again, and my heart dropped. Music. More accurate, the piano. A series of notes dancing across the house. Jake barked softly, that little bark dogs do when they want to alert but not make a scene. My first thought was that it was a mouse. The thought almost ran out the door when the notes came again. My brain scrambled to make sense of it. Maybe my dad and uncle were back and messing around. My mom slept on, oblivious to the fear in the air and the mysterious piano playing. I didn't sleep for the rest of the night, in case any more mysterious occurrences happened. I also took to exploring the land around me, and every so often I'd find old rocks or even fairy circles, a bunch of trees, plants, or stones which, according to folklore, you should never enter. Sometimes when I'd sit outside in the late evening, I could hear music in the wind, soft enough to think I might be imagining it. Sometimes Jake would bark at little corners of the garden or the house, but we learned to ignore those things, since the house's main occupant took up most of our attention when it came to supernatural goings-on. There are so many moments that seem significant, but for timing's sake, I'll gloss over the dog being terrified of the bathroom, the time my mother saw a man run across the back garden only to disappear, and of course, my uncle bringing back some dark things after he went camping with his son in a notoriously haunted area. Now to bring you to what, to me, was the biggest incident. My uncle had a son, Sean, about 7 when he came to visit. He was a mischievous little troublemaker, but was basically just a bored kid in the middle of nowhere. Sean was staying in my room. Not that I minded, but I felt a little knot in my stomach. That feeling you get when you know you're about to be in trouble when mom and dad come home. That feeling wasn't unfounded. In fact, it would become painfully valid that night. We went about our days as normal. Me reading, drawing and writing. Sean creating havoc. Eventually, we set up a blow-up mattress on the floor and got ready for bed. Sean had never been the best sleeper. Still young, still restless. And eventually, we both drifted off around the same time. That's when it started. I began to dream. I've always had very vivid dreams. At one point, I was prone to lucid dreaming and sleep paralysis. Once I dreamed my sister was pregnant, and a month later, it was true. But this dream wasn't symbolic or playful. In my dream, I was walking around the house, and it was pitch black outside. Every shadow seemed larger. What made me realize this dream wasn't safe was how quiet it was. Normally, my dreams have background music, elevator music, or some instrumental. But this dream, aside from the floor creaks and the wind, was silent. I had a camera, like a kid's VTech camera, and kept taking pictures in every room. There was no one in sight, until I reached my bedroom. When I opened the door, Sean was there, sleeping restlessly, tossing and turning, whimpering a little. I lifted the camera to my face to take a picture, and through the camera's view, I saw her, standing over Sean, a grotesque old lady. Her skin a sickly gray-green, decomposed, her eyes missing. Her nightdress, once pink, stained, tattered, caked in mud. Her nails were long and filthy. Even with nothing in her eye sockets, the look she gave my cousin was pure hatred. I pulled the camera away, and she wasn't there. Sean continued to shuffle and whimper. I raised the camera again, and there she was, right there. She turned to me and said something in a voice that sounded like it should have stayed buried. I don't remember the words now. All I remember is the cold, gut-level fear of what she said, enough to wake me in an absolute panic to a bright, sunny morning. A terrible contrast to the perpetual night I'd just escaped. Sean woke before me. When I finally did get up, his bed had been stripped. In the main part of the house, I found the washing machine full of sheets and Sean sitting at the table, freshly showered and sullen. I asked if he was okay and he said nothing. My mother shook her head and mouthed, "Later." When Sean left to go back to his mother's house, I sat out with my mother. She told me that poor Sean had an awful nightmare. A green woman in a tattered dress with long nails was tormenting him all night, and he'd had an accident as a result. My blood ran slow and I felt dizzy. I told my mom about my dream, and you should have seen the look on her face. This isn't a woman who scares easily. I've seen her kick in someone's door and drag them out of their house. I've heard stories about her and my father working as bouncers for nightclubs. She was the one everyone else feared. But in that moment, she was afraid, and she was going to do something about it. She cleansed the house. Sage, sound cleansing, threats shouted into the air. Everything you could think of, she did. Nothing changed. The piano still played. The dog still refused to go in the bathroom. I was still tormented. We eventually moved to another house, and after some time, my uncle moved in with us. The house my parents live in now maybe has a few little spirits, and I even heard a banshee not long before my uncle died. But it is a damn sight safer and nicer than the house on the rock.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The Fae Folk Are Always Around by Ravenfire 82. I know I'm risking sounding completely crazy, but I need some confirmation that I'm not alone in this. I'm constantly seeing sparkles in my bedroom, and I thought I was just having some vision issues. I'm 43 years old. One night, however, I was lying in bed with my eyes closed, almost asleep, when suddenly a bright light shined into my right eye. When I opened them, there was this little creature with kind of an oval-shaped head, where the longer side was horizontal instead of vertical like ours. He had pointed ears and black eyes. He was a grayish color. He didn't seem to be wearing clothes, but I could only see from around the mid-chest up to the top of the head. His hands were resting on my pillow, and he was leaning slightly to his left and toward me. He was looking right into my eyes. He disappeared after a few seconds. I shifted my eyes to the right of where he stood and either saw him again or saw a second one, just inches from where he had just been. This was just inches from my face, and I felt something on my leg. Since then, I've seen small shadows and tiny specks of light. What I saw looking at me didn't appear to have wings, but I also see tiny sparkles around the room and spots where it looks like there's something invisible blocking my view of things. I hear noises around the same areas that I see these shadows and visual interruptions. A week after I saw the creature next to me, another person in the house told me he sees brownies sometimes, and his things get moved around. I had not told him what I saw, just that there was something else in the house. I got him to sit with me for a while, and he did see the sparkles and shadows that I mentioned. This activity started to increase, and now, at times, I feel my hair being touched at the same time that I feel someone close to my face, or something. I also put my hand out once and asked one of them to touch it, and almost immediately I felt something warm on my palm. Then it felt like a tiny finger drawing on my skin. I've asked them to show themselves to me, but they haven't. They will touch me and let me know that they're here, and the glimpses I see are getting a little more obvious, but they don't seem to want to show themselves fully. Maybe they're just easing into it to protect themselves and me, since I have been startled by them at times when I wasn't aware of their presence. I have also seen other entities here, but the house has been smudged because they were not good. So now I ask you, has anyone else experienced similar situations? Can anyone give me tips as to how to communicate with them and let them know they are safe? I think that they know that, as they have been sitting with me at night and making themselves known.
Are Dreams Potential Gateways? By Tara. I haven't told this story to too many people, besides the fact that it is creepy. A lot of people I know are skeptics. This happened back in 2013, 2014 sometime. My then boyfriend and I lived in our roommate's home in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the one she had gotten in her divorce. My then boyfriend and I were pretty big horror lovers. The paranormal is something that always fascinated me from a young age, and he was also pretty sensitive to the unseen, supposedly anyway. One afternoon, we had his brother over, and we were all watching spooky movies and retelling encounters that had happened to each of us in the past. Let me go back a bit and mention that this house, it had a weird vibe to it. It always felt like someone was just out of eyesight, watching you. Especially at night. I hated being there alone. Even though I love all things spooky, I'm a total wuss when it comes to being alone in the dark. Vivid imagination will get you every time. As it got later in the evening, I told them both they had to hang out with me in the bedroom until I passed out, because I was all sorts of creeped out. I eventually fell asleep for a while. When I woke up, my boyfriend was across the room, fist cocked back and yelling at me, "What's so funny?" Confused, I told him I didn't know what he was talking about. He slowly came over to sit next to me on the bed and asked, "Are you you again?" "Huh? What do you mean?" I responded. He asked me to think really hard about what I was dreaming about before I woke up. "Well, I was laughing at you because you had this long black dress on, and you looked funny in it." He looked at me with wide eyes and told me that shortly after he and his brother left the room when I fell asleep, his brother saw a woman in the kitchen. She was facing out the window with long black hair and wearing a long black dress. After his brother told him this, he came to check on me. He said he sat down next to me on the bed and started to rub my back. He said I started to giggle a little and began to lift myself up off the bed from laying on my stomach with this creepy, wide smile on my face. I had apparently seemed so sinister that he was in full defense mode, ready to clock me if I, or whoever was piloting me at the time, rushed him. I've had other experiences, but none like that since then. So it leaves me wondering, is the dreamscape a portal to the other side? I'm very naive when it comes to that kind of stuff, but I'm curious to know what others think of it.
The Mysterious Ritual by O. Thug. I've never been much of a believer in superstition or omens, but there's a story in my family that's always given me the creeps. I thought that it would be interesting to share here, to see if anyone has heard something similar. This story involves my great-grandfather, a simple man who lived in the countryside of the Northeast, who had a very peculiar ritual. During his birthday parties, especially when the date coincided with a full moon, he would do something that everyone in the family considered strange. My great-grandfather would take a basin of water, carefully fill it, and place it under the moonlight. The ritual was always silent, almost solemn, as if he were in a moment of deep introspection. He would also observe his own reflection in the water, and after a few moments, he would say the same phrase. The day I no longer see myself here, it will be because the next day I will be here. This went on for many years, and every time he would repeat the ritual, the family members around him would fall silent without questioning it. It was as if everyone sensed that it held some type of mysterious meaning, but no one dared to speak about it. To my great-grandfather, that moment seemed sacred, something that went beyond simple superstition. It was as if he had a direct connection to the moon and what it could reveal. Until one day, something different happened. During his birthday, he performed the same ritual, but this time, when he looked into the water, my great-grandfather couldn't see his own reflection. He stood there for a few minutes, contemplating the empty basin without saying a word. Then, he turned to my grandfather and, with disturbing calm, said, "Get ready, because I'm going to leave." Nobody really understood what he meant at the time, but 5 days later, he passed away in his sleep, peacefully, as if he already knew that it was time. This story has always floated around in my family as a mystery that has never been fully explained, and even I, someone who doesn't believe in omens or the supernatural, can't help but get goosebumps every time I hear it retold. My family swears that it's true, and I always wonder, was it just an eerie coincidence? Or was there something deeper involved?
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Apartment Footsteps by Annie Is Okay. I've never been sure how to tell this story, but it happened when I was living in a tiny upstairs apartment about 10 years ago. It wasn't an old or historic place or anything like that, just a regular two-bedroom in a converted house. Most nights were quiet except for the usual traffic on the street, but every once in a while, always late, like 2 or 3 in the morning, I'd hear the sound of someone walking in the hallway outside my bedroom. The first time I figured it was my roommate getting up for water. But when I mentioned it the next morning, she swore she'd been asleep the whole night. We had that conversation several times. The footsteps kept happening. Not every night, but often enough that I started leaving my door cracked just to see. One night I was still awake when I heard them again, clear as anything. Slow, steady steps. Like bare feet on wood, except the hallway was carpeted. They weren't your typical house noises. They were footsteps, I'm positive. I got up, thinking maybe it was the neighbor, but when I stepped into the hall, it was empty. The weirdest part was the smell, like damp earth, strong enough that it hit me the second I walked out. It disappeared within a minute. After that, things got stranger. My cat, who usually slept at the foot of my bed, started sitting in the hallway at night, staring at nothing, with her tail flicking. Cats do weird things, but one time I remember her hissing and bolting back into my room, right before I heard the steps again. I heard them at least a dozen times while I lived there. I never saw anything. No figures, no shadows, nothing like that. But the sound of those steps and that smell, I can't explain them, and I never heard any weird stories about that place. I only lived there for another 6 months, and I still think about where it all came from.
My True Scary Story by Addie. One day I was in my dining room, where I keep my musical instruments. I was playing guitar while nobody was home. Then I put it down to go get something to eat. As I looked up to get up, there was a figure peeking out from my kitchen door. It had a dark mist-like shape and nothing but white hands. It didn't really have legs, just more of a mist. It threw me off, but I didn't feel scared. I felt like it wasn't a negative energy. It was like the thing was lost, and it didn't mean any harm. I went about my day without seeing it again. Then one morning, I got ready for school and I saw it again. This time down the steps, walking out of the dining room and into the kitchen. That's when I started to feel scared. Again, I didn't feel bad. Not at first. But then one night, I felt nauseous and started to feel watched. As I was going to sleep, I was looking over and I saw that same figure beside my mirror. But this time, it had a face. It was the most disturbing and terrifying thing I had ever seen in my life. The smile and the eyes, they were horrifying. I didn't scream. I couldn't. I wanted to, but I just stared. Then it went away. I turned on the TV for some background noise and distraction, and I tried to fall asleep again, but it didn't feel good anymore. It felt bad. I told my mom about it, and she froze. My brother used to see the same figure in the dining room when he was younger, but she never told me because she didn't want to scare me. This really freaked me out. I kept seeing the figure again, but never with the face like it had that one night. I hung a cross on my wall and I tried to get it to leave. My mom asked if I brought anything new into my room, something that could have made it come back, and I searched and found something. I opened my mirror, looking for a necklace, and found a pair of old white gloves, vintage, worn in the 1920s, the same gloves the figure had when I saw him. I told my mom, and we moved the gloves to the bathroom instead of keeping them in my room. Now I get that bad energy from the bathroom, and that's when I realized that's what it was all along. They were a gift from my grandma. She had them for some reason, so I can't get rid of them. What should I do? I can't live with this thing around me any longer.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
So we have two stories that feature some Irish folklore, or at least the fae folk. I know it was like a Celtic type of thing. I don't really recall off the top of my head, full transparency, if it was Irish or not.
Yeah, I find the fae folk stuff to be really interesting, but we'll get to that. I want to talk about that Lisheen house. Is that how you would say that?
You know what? That's what I went with.
Yeah.
I seem to always mispronounce things. Speaking of comments, reading listener comments, we got an Instagram comment a couple hours ago. Somebody speculated the reason why some people accuse us of being AI is because of the way that we use words or mispronounce them. Like, apparently I use the term, the dog gave a penciled look instead of a puzzled look. But in my defense, I thought maybe a penciled look was like a piercing look and just slang I hadn't heard. Maybe it was from like a different country or something. So I just rolled with it. But I think maybe it was probably like people could be using their phones to write stories and then it's like an autocorrect thing. And then it just got the better of both of us. So
yeah, you have to be pretty cognizant when you're using any type of spell correction, grammar correction, or writing helper AI. Like, while it definitely helps, you also have to keep it in check. And I could see how that would happen. Also, you were reading a story. Like, you weren't saying that yourself. You are not AI. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
You were just reading the story. How does that, you know?
And to be fair, some teachers have asked the question if I could be dyslexic. And it happens to the best of us. The brain doesn't always, or the mouth doesn't always translate what the brain reads. It's harder than it seems.
Well, I'm glad that I asked you to do a spoken word narration podcast with me.
I love the irony of that. I really do. It's kind of funny how that worked out because I've never liked public speaking or using my voice or anything like that. And here I am, but it's a blessing. It's good to pull yourself out of the comfort zones of life.
When I started Let's Not Meet, it's been almost a decade ago. Prior to that, I had done almost zero reading aloud for anything. And I was terrible at it, and I still think that I am. And like, that was probably one of the last career choices I should have made, you know, logically.
Yeah.
Something that I'm terrible at and that I'm terrified of doing and that I don't want to do. But I ended up liking it, being okay at it, but doing some real deep editing to make it sound good.
Yeah, not much different than my day job. So much cognitive dissonance with that.
Oof, yeah, I know.
Got a couple years so I can do the full scoop on that one, but
oh, can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
That's going to be such a great episode too.
Big old bombshell episode. Yeah. We'll do it on episode 911.
Okay. Yeah, we'll make it there.
Yeah, we will. So I guess back to the story of the Lisheen house. Probably didn't say that right. I do like these folklore tales because they sort of like teach us, the way I interpret it is like a parable. These very well could be real things. Like I believe that fae folk are real to an extent. I don't know if they're these actual physical manifestations that we see and hear about, but they could be signs. Maybe they're from like whatever the realm that the dreams lie in. You know what I mean? Like some other sort of manifestation beyond physicality.
Well, yeah. And then they also have multiple interpretations or meanings in the sense that, like, if you think about mermaids, what we know as mermaids are new as mermaids for much of American culture and pop culture and in literature and movies and stuff was there are these beautiful, magnificent underwater beings that are, you know, just these gorgeous women with tails and
seashells over their breasts for whatever reason, like they would bother to censor themselves.
The Modesty of a Mermaid.
Hey, that's a band name for you.
I was just going to say that. That's pretty good. Oh, man. But yeah, but then when you read into classic accounts of mermaids, they're terrifying. Like sharp teeth. They look like demons with pitchforks and, you know, fishtails. They're completely different from what you would expect based on popular culture. And then even with fairies, I always thought of fairies as like Peter Pan, pixie dust. I guess Disney is what's shaped all of our folk tales into just friendly childhood stories. But yeah, the origin of fairies or fae folk, which I had never even heard that term until I started the podcast. They were evil. They're tricksters. They're not great characters like they are in books and popular culture nowadays. So it's funny how folk tales started off as warnings, as parables about life or just evil beings.
And a foreshadowing of Treasure Island, apparently.
There you go. And then they ended up being just these cute little Disney characters that we grew to love. And that's what I like about learning about fables, folk tales, and stuff, because they always have darker origins than what we know about.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the piano playing, do you think that could have been an intelligent haunting or like maybe something more residual?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's anybody's guess. I mean, it's either A or B, so.
I think that the piano playing was probably, let's go with B.
Okay, sounds good. I'm going to go with yeah. A just to be a counter. I can't even think of the word. There we go. Let's keep this one in there.
Counter. Yeah, well, at least it wasn't chopsticks on repeat. That would have been its own kind of torture.
Yeah, I don't think ghosts take requests either. Or maybe they do. You can ask it to leave on a Ouija board. So maybe they do if you're firm but polite about it.
I'm really upset we didn't have any coins for that player piano at the ice cream shop.
I know.
Last month.
I know. I have so many memories of that. The room, just the room sound, you know, like how orchestra hall has its own type of thing. And yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, if anybody's curious about the player piano, Brandon and I usually meet up in our hometown that we grew up in whenever he visits family. And we usually just hit up the usual spots, the pool hall, our favorite Mexican restaurant, and an ice cream shop. It's like a cute little date that we do because we don't drink, we don't party. And that's a good time for us, honestly.
It really is. And then the mall, walking all 10 steps and seeing it all.
Mm-hmm.
The massages, though, I will say, are absolutely worth it. But they do trick you. Like, you'll get like a 30-minute massage, and then at the very end, they'll say like, oh, 10 more minutes. But they'll say it in a way where you're not sure if they're informing you that you have 10 minutes left, mm-hmm. or if you're wanting 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, they know what they're doing. So needless to say, I ended up with a 40-minute massage and paying for it.
I still can't wrap my head around getting a massage with your shirt on, like a clothed massage. I feel like that would be really uncomfortable and kind of hurt with the fabric rubbing against your skin. I don't know. Maybe it's a sensory thing for me.
You would think this is more like a deep tissue type of, I don't know. It's not like an oiled down type of thing like that. It's just very, it feels like you're going to a physical therapist almost, like where you don't really, I don't know, something about it just doesn't really make me uncomfortable or feel like it's not relaxing. It's just like, oh yeah, right. They're kind of like getting like the sheep getting sheared in Family Guy. It's very much like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I think it was the cow getting milked is what it was.
Maybe it was both.
It might be both, yeah.
I do know there is a sheep shearing. Do you close your eyes when you get haircuts?
That's rough. Well, I don't get haircuts anymore. I just shave my head. But thinking back, because it's been a long time, if it's somebody that I don't know, like I've been to barbershops where they're like manly, like overcompensating, there's beer and, you know, porn playing on the TV. I don't know. It's yeah. But going to those places, like I just kind of stare straight at my face and I don't look away. I just look directly into my own eyes.
I've recently started closing my eyes because I do enjoy getting my hair cut and it kind of gives me some ASMR at times. But I used to avoid closing my eyes because I was self-conscious about other people looking at me and thinking, oh, look at that guy enjoying his haircut. So stupid. But now I just realize like that really doesn't matter. So I'm just closing my eyes and just getting all the tingles from it.
That is such a cute, self-conscious thought to have.
One of many. Yeah.
same. Yeah. I'm constantly thinking like that. Like, I don't want this person to think this of me. And I hate that I do that.
Yeah. And like walking. Oh, wait, I'm not moving my arms enough. And
yeah,
everything like that. All of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So speaking of like parables and folk tales, the mysterious ritual story that I shared this week, it almost fits in that genre because it read kind of like a Bible story almost. It was like the old man goes and does this ritual with the basin of water in the moonlight, very specifically, and he recites these same words every time he does it. And in the end, it has to do with his death. And it read like something, like a passage from the Bible or something ancient. And I think that I find that type of stuff a lot more scary than modern scary stories or horror stories. I want to kind of transition this into folk horror because I want to talk to you about some movies. But there's something scarier about old stories compared to modern horror. And I think when I think of modern horror, I think of people with cell phones and technology and just things happening in the modern world. I'm just getting kind of sick of it. I'm getting kind of sick of modern horror and modern horror stories.
It's pretty played out at this point and people are really leaning into it.
It is.
Which isn't a bad thing, but by leaning into it, I just mean like, I don't know how to really phrase it, but it's just overly accessible and overly consumed where it almost kind of creates these self-fulfilling prophecies and all the shticks have been done. And it's really hard to find something that's like compelling and actually scary other than just kind of like watching a movie analytically and appreciating it and moving on. Like you don't really lose yourself into some of these movies these days, but it doesn't make them bad movies. It's just the magic isn't quite there for me, at least.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. But with these stories, there's so much mystery and magic involved. And I think that's why I like movies like Wicker Man or Midsommar, stuff like that, that has to do with more folk horror genre. Even Hereditary almost has a bit of that.
Oh, I love Hereditary.
Stuff to do with witches. Stuff to do with witches, ancient rituals, ancient magic, horror.
The Witch, good one too.
Satanic horror also scares the hell out of me. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the scariest genre for me.
Oh, and to clarify that, another asterisk, because we did get an email and I meant to reply back. So if you're listening, when we mention satanic stuff or witchcraft for that matter, and that isn't pulling them together.
Yeah.
We're just reading stories as we get them.
Totally different.
And even so, we're fully aware that most Satanists don't believe in God and they're not worshiping the devil. Mm-hmm. We know witchcraft isn't some like black magic thing. And
yeah,
that doesn't mean some people don't try to turn it into things and co-opt them into these like spookier, darker things. So we're fully aware. We're fully aware. Thank you for your concern. Where was that from? Oh, that's Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead. Thank you for your concern.
Thank you for your concern. Especially witchcraft specifically. Like witchcraft is such like a positive, awesome practice that was totally co-opted. Like the pentagram of all things was like a sign of protection. And
make it evil.
Make it evil.
Quickly to circle back on the what you're mentioning, like the Bible parables with the mysterious ritual story, I was thinking the no reflection thing, that sounded like something like somebody would be accursed by God in the Old Testament and he had not seen himself in the reflection for 7 nights or something like that.
Exactly.
Like,
I love that stuff. I love when numbered days are included. Yeah, that kind of stuff is so cool and so interesting. That's kind of why I thought The Ring was so good and so terrifying. It kind of had that like fable to it. You'll die in 7 days if you watch it. And that foreboding feeling, not seeing yourself in the reflection, that's such a scary thought, you know, those little subtle things.
Pretty cool to see.
Yeah, but we also got some dream stories. I love when we get some dream stories, you know, about the gateway one from Tara.
Oh yeah, the potential gateways. I thought it was cool for a lot of reasons, but the imagery alone is freaky to say the least.
Yeah,
and I don't really know if there's some sort of like weird possession that took over, and then seeing the woman in black. What I thought of though, like the title of the story, "Are Dreams Potential Gateways?" I just thought of like how the CIA was like really researching the Monroe Institute and into all all the remote viewing stuff, and that just goes to show me like the CIA is open-minded.
Yeah.
That's not really what I was thinking, but it just makes me think that there's validity to it all.
No. You know, the funny thing about that, I watched an interview with one of the only surviving people that worked with Robert Monroe at the Monroe Institute. He actually worked on the Hemisync audio and composed a lot of the music and the sounds in those. So he knew the process really well, the gateway process. And he actually had some thoughts on the CIA thing. They wanted to use astral projection or remote viewing to help soldiers in fighting wars and spying and stuff. They literally did want to do that. The problem is, when the soldiers were practicing the gateway tapes and they were getting into these out of body states, these subconscious states, they were experiencing love and...
Yeah, I don't want to kill anymore.
Yeah, they were discovering things about themselves, talking to spirit guides, traveling to different realms. They weren't at all concerned with what's going on with the, you know, I don't know, the Middle East war. They just were improving their lives. And that's kind of what, you know, Robert Monroe was all about, enriching your life. And that was always funny to me to think of, like, oh, yeah, this doesn't work. This is just making everybody better people. We don't want that.
Right. Yeah. No, we can't accomplish our global mission with that. Can't have any of that. Did you hear about the alleged briefing that Jimmy Carter got that just made him break down crying?
I heard about that, but I don't know if that's true. I think that was like a friend said a friend thing that wasn't actually there.
Yeah.
Still, it's a scary thought. It's a really scary thought. I think it had to do with aliens, right?
Yeah, he was basically told, like, all right, listen, Jimbo, aliens are real, and essentially, like, they created us, and then they created religion, so we didn't destroy ourselves, so they could continue to research us, and that's it. We're just, like, a bunch of ants in an ant farm, and it made poor Jimmy cry, allegedly. I doubt there's much truth to that, but...
Still, it's a scary thought.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. I think those sort of stories are probably the scariest things, the things that are like deep state potential cover-ups and what we really want to know but don't know and what's being hidden from us. Those speculations, it takes you down like an unhealthy, sometimes unhealthy conspiracy theory rabbit hole, but like the pursuit of information and all that is just incredible. I love seeing all these like declassified documents and it makes me wonder, well, what are they still withholding? Like, why is that redacted? What else is out there? What hasn't been FOIA requested? How do we even know they're complying? Like, even so with like those documents, they can be, I believe the term is whitewashed or something. But they'll like release internal memos within like intelligence organizations to their own people with misinformation. So then it kind of leads their own people astray. It's so, so ridiculous how deep the spider's web tangles.
Mm-hmm. I always find that stuff very interesting. I love it. But for the last story that I want to talk about, the Fae Folk, which we brought up, I really just want to clarify a couple of things because I was confused when I was reading the story. And I know listeners probably heard these two things and they're like, what the hell is he talking about? And so the author brought up smudging and brownies. And I was just laughing to myself. I had to edit out my laughs when I was recording. So I had to look this up. Smudging. To smudge a house for purification, you light a bundle of herbs like white sage, walk through the space clockwise, and allow the smoke to waft into every corner to cleanse negative energy. Focus on the intention of clearing negativity and inviting clarity, and don't extinguish the smudge until it burns out on its own, allowing the energy to flow naturally. This practice is a spiritual act aimed at bringing balance and positive energy into the home after clearing negative vibrations. I didn't know this was called smudging, did you?
Yeah.
This is totally new for me, and I'm sure there are listeners out there that it's new for them too. I just thought it was called cleansing. You're cleansing with sage or something, you know?
Yeah, definitely smudging. My mom got me, I believe it was sage, after the three loud bangs and just some other stuff that's kind of happened around this house.
Yeah.
I haven't burnt it or anything. I think just having the sage and having appreciation for it and having a positive headspace is fine, but I'm not burning it. I'm not telling anybody to get out or leave me alone. I'm just kind of peacefully existing and protecting my spirit, and all is fine. Nothing really crazy has happened since.
That's cute.
Yeah.
I did try burning sage. It smells bad. I do not like it. I thought it would smell great, like incense, but no, it's...
It apparently pisses the spirits off, too, so I leave it alone.
I could see why.
Yeah. It's like blowing cigarette smoke in somebody's car with the windows rolled up. You don't do that.
Yeah. And speaking of folklore, brownies. So brownies are considered paranormal or supernatural creatures from Scottish and English folklore, not cryptids. They are a type of household spirit or hobgoblin that performs chores for a family at night.
That is so helpfully passive aggressive. And why are they called brownies? Is there a connotation? I don't like that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that. It's not good. That's all I wanted to say about that story. I did enjoy that one. I always love a good fae folk story. That one was actually pretty creepy, though.
Corroborated by another person. That's always nice.
Exactly. When something is corroborated by somebody else, it always helps the story. And before we go, we obviously have to get to some comments. I saved those for last today. And it's funny because all of the comments that we got on Spotify all have to do with the same thing. I'm going to read them all off very quickly. So this one comes from either Lena or Rena. I don't know what the direct translation is. It was in Japanese characters. Could it be that that movie you guys were talking about last week, about somebody waking up in somebody else's body, maybe you're thinking of Quantum Leap. It's not a movie, though. It's a TV series that I loved from the 80s, early 90s. No, that's not what we were talking about. I think that what you and I were talking about was some kind of like thriller, or it was a suspense type movie, right?
Right, right.
I don't know what movie it was where somebody wakes up as somebody else. Rachel said, while this may not be the movie you were thinking of, Behind Her Eyes on Netflix has a very similar premise. And it's all regarding astral projection as well. Very cool. Highly recommend if you haven't seen it. I'll add that to my list because that's my second recommendation. Delaney says, you should check out the Telepathy Tapes podcast. It's all about parents, teachers, doctors, etc., and kids who experience telepathy seeing through each other's eyes. I will definitely check that out.
That's some good guerrilla marketing too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're from the Telepathy Tapes, free ad for you, no problem, because I like the idea. But two more here. Derek Mung says, two movies I know of where people wake up in somebody else's body, The Hot Chick and Freaky Friday.
Fair. Touche. Touche.
And then, Praise Garland said it's Freaky Friday, and then a bunch of people on our Discord said it's Freaky Friday. It's not Freaky Friday, I promise. And it's not Freakier Friday.
Yeah, as haunting as it was.
What are we doing here?
I don't know. I'm ready to wrap. I'm getting tired after the shower.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everybody. We appreciate all of you. If you appreciate us, you can sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes. The best way to listen to the show.
With your eyes closed.
Oh, yeah. Close your eyes. It gets better. D-grads, let's not meet. Cryptic Encounters, Real Time Radio Cast. Check them all out, crypticcantpodcasts.com. We'll see you guys next week, everybody. Stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.